Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, June 27, 2017. I am Jason Powell on ProWrestling.net. Today you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of WWE SmackDown Live. We should also have the WWE Raw viewership numbers and certainly my WWE Raw hit list. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw television show. WWE Raw was in Los Angeles, California at Staples Center on Monday, and they really try to put their best foot forward when they are in a big market like this, and for the most part, I felt they did. Yeah, you had that really weird segment with the Ball family, and boy, you had all sorts of Balls there. You had Balls and Kurt Angle's Hopper. You got the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. Raw was certainly Balls on Monday. But, aside from these weird celebrity segment, I felt like the segments where they really buckled down and tried to promote certain matches for the Great Balls of Fire event, they did a really nice job. You told me going into the show that they were going to close with a segment involving the women, and it didn't involve Alexa. It did not involve Alexa Bliss. I would have felt like, they're really pushing it here. But they closed with a gauntlet match, and the live crowd was into it for the most part. You know, there were certain times during the match where they were less into it than others. But I thought by the time the thing was over, they did a really good thing. They ended up making Sasha Banks feel very relevant again. She is the number one contender now for the women's championship, and they protected Nia Jax in the process by having her go through four other women before Sasha was able to put her away. And they showcased Alexa Bliss at the end and her match coming up with Sasha by having her come out, get roughed up a little bit by Sasha. And so I thought that was one of the highlights of the show, as were the segments involving Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe, and also Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. They actually opened up with that Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman segment. They had Roman come out to the usual number of boos, I would say, maybe a little heavier. Los Angeles has never exactly been Roman Reigns country. It's odd because I think they've been nicer to John Cena than some markets. I could be mistaken on that, but I know with Roman Reigns, they have been very tough on him in L.A. But the broadcast team was Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Booker T. Had JoJo on the ring announcer job, and Cole kind of brought up Roman Reigns facing Samoa Joe last week, and Braun Strowman returning to provide the distraction that led to Joe winning, and Reigns kind of soaked up the boos and then told the fans that that if they just give him a minute, they might like what he has to say. And he accepted the ambulance match challenge that Strowman issued the week before, and then said that he's going to throw Strowman into the back of an ambulance, jump in the driver's seat, and take him straight to hell, because this is my yard. I don't know what his yard has to do with taking someone to hell in an ambulance, but hey, whatever. The ambulance siren then sounded, and that interrupted Reigns, and they had an ambulance back its way onto the arena floor next to the stage. And Reigns, of course, wanted to investigate this, assuming, I think, like a lot of people were, that Braun Strowman was inside. He opened up the back doors to this ambulance, and the fans, there was nobody in there. The fans roared, and then Braun Strowman ended up attacking Roman from the side of the ambulance, and ended up tossing him onto the Raw stage and played to the live crowd, which was very receptive. And then Roman did come back with a couple of uppercuts. Strowman nearly fell off the stage from one of these, and then Reigns went for a Superman punch, but Strowman caught him and threw him into the side of the ambulance. It was a very cool visual. They replayed it several times, brought back some memories of Kevin Nash back in the day using Rey Mysterio as a human lawn dart when he threw him into a trailer outside of one of the Nitro locations back in the early days of the NWO. But Strowman ended up tossing Reigns inside the back of the ambulance, and he closed the doors. So let's see, we saw Shinsuke Nakamura pull down the Money in the Bank briefcase at the end of the go-home show for the Money in the Bank show. And now we've seen Strowman basically show that, this is how you win an ambulance match. For Strowman's sake, let's hope it goes better for him than it did for Shinsuke at Money in the Bank in terms of the outcome of that match. But Strowman did pat the back of the ambulance. The siren started up again, and then the ambulance drove off. Strowman went back to the stage and looked up to the fans and raised his arms kind of victoriously and got mostly cheers from the live crowd. But a good segment. I mean, I think it's just the continued destruction from, basically more carnage from Braun Strowman. We've seen this formula before when they were setting up Reigns against Strowman, where they were smart about it. You know, they didn't make it 50-50. They didn't. Strowman dominated. I think Reigns may have gotten in some hope spots, and I don't even know if on the go home show they really made Roman look all that strong. I like that someone is a challenge for Roman Reigns. You know, I think he goes into most of the matches he is in as a favorite in the eyes of the fans. When he's in there with Strowman, it's an obstacle for him. It's something that he needs to overcome. And so this was done really well with, once again, with Strowman standing tall and Roman battling from underneath, which you don't see too often with him. So good hype for their ambulance match coming up at the Great Balls of Fire show. Michael Cole was quick to hype Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe for later in the show. They only showed Lesnar in the graphic. He was cheered. And so it may have seemed odd if you weren't paying attention to what was airing on the screen when because right at the time he mentioned Lesnar is when the fans cheered, and then he mentioned Samoa Joe and there was no response, but I think it was just because the fans saw the same graphic that viewers did. And then Graves was hyping a six-man tag for after the break. And I thought overall this was a hot start to the show, you know, with Reigns and Strowman, and then it kind of continued from there. They went into the opening six-man tag match. Well, first they had Elias Sampson ready to do his guitar bit. He was seated in the ring on his stool, had the spotlights on him, but he was also positioned next to, or I guess in between, Sheamus and Cesaro. And he talked about how he's normally a solo artist, but he wanted to form a trio on this night and give the fans a song they deserved. I was, believe me, as much as I've kind of like, I can take or leave the whole Elias Sampson singing bit, this was one time where I'm like, yeah, let's hear it. And they didn't. The Hardys interrupted, and Finn Balor ended up making a separate entrance, and the match was on. And it was Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, and Finn Balor defeating Elias Sampson, Sheamus, and Cesaro in 17 minutes and 30 seconds. This really did keep the momentum going from that opening segment. The fans were really into the Hardys and Finn Balor. They did a good job, I think, of making Elias Sampson feel like he belongs in this mix. You know, I think that's the key with him right now. He doesn't really have an established feud. Maybe Dean Ambrose. It's almost like they're kind of laying the groundwork for him to do something with Ambrose, but they also are having Ambrose feud with The Miz, and so I'm not sure when they're getting to that officially. If it's going to be a triple threat, as I've mentioned, even throwing that out there as a possibility, I don't know. But no, this was good for him, I think, to be in this mix. The finish of this, you had Balor performing a sling blade on Cesaro and dropkicking him, and then going up top for his finisher. He kind of stayed perched there, and I was like, gosh, I hope that Elias Sampson isn't late to push him off or something. No, he was just standing there, kind of perched on that top rope, waiting for the Hardys as they took care of the others at ringside. And then he performed his coup de grace finisher on Cesaro and pinned him. So the baby faces go over. LA is rocking at this point. And they didn't really maintain the momentum, but it wasn't like, you know, this was that's it for the fun. It certainly wasn't one of those nights. We got a Shattered Dreams production video, and it was Goldust asking if the fans could feel and taste it. He was just setting up his segment with R-Truth and talking about how it was our grand finale, and I'm putting the finishing touches on my masterpiece. And Graves then said that Goldust would face R-Truth coming up after the break. And then we had a video teaser for free agent John Cena's return on the July 4th SmackDown. I still say the broadcast team should be talking about this. It's big enough news that, you know, just listing John Cena in the graphic as a free agent, yeah, it gets people going, what does that mean? But you know what would also help with that? Is if the broadcast team were to treat it like it was huge news and ask, what's going on with John Cena? We don't know. Corey, you're the guy with the inside info. Anything? No, I don't have anything. And it just really kind of set the tone, set the stage of like, what does this mean? Could he be coming back to Raw? Where does he stand with WWE? However you want to frame it, they can do whatever they want with it, but it does feel like they should be asking those questions for the fans rather than just putting out the graphic each time. But they went to a commercial break. When they came back, Goldust made his entrance. He has a personal cameraman. It wasn't anyone I recognized as a wrestler. I immediately thought, man, Rockstar Spud would be really cool in a role like this, because he's always been such a good second in TNA and now in Impact Wrestling for EC3, the whole Madam Dixie thing that he was doing. And I even got a kick, even though I didn't really care for the Damian Sandow Liberace character, Aaron Rex, I guess is what he was calling himself there. I thought Spud was still comical in that even. So I think Spud would have been perfect for this, but obviously that's not happening because Spud is with Impact Wrestling. But R-Truth comes out, so they're going to have a match, but Goldust attacks Truth. Cole very quick to point out that the match had not officially started. Goldust went to the floor, pulled Truth into the post from there and then stood on the second rope over Truth. And Cole said that Truth came out for a match, not an attack by this sicko Goldust. Sounds like something my mom would say, that sicko. But yeah, it was brief. You know, for the month of build they've been doing, when you just stop and think, like, it was for this, but I mean, obviously, I'm sure they'll do more coming up at the pay-per-view or certainly on television, so this wasn't the end of it, but it was a little underwhelming, just like that it was just so brief, and there really wasn't, you know, it was a quick attack, and it wasn't like it was a focus of the show going forward. Backstage, Charlie Caruso told Paul Heyman that social media was on fire about Brock Lesnar appearing, and Heyman said Staples Center is on fire because his client would call out Samoa Joe. Joe showed up and put Heyman in the coquina clutch position. He didn't actually apply the hold. He told him that it was... Heyman was quick to say, I'm just an advocate. And Joe said that that coquina clutch is meant for Brock Lesnar, and then let Heyman go. Just kind of foreshadowing things that would occur later in the show. Joe's really good at that. When he's toying with someone, he's very good at that. Graves then hyped Miz TV with the Ball family, which we'll get to. Graves said they were all there and would appear after the break, and they went to a commercial. We had a Did You Know bit on Stephanie McMahon being named one of the most powerful women in sports by Adweek, and Cole noted that Adweek mentioned Stephanie's work with the Women's Revolution in WWE. So she presented the title belt. Okay. All right. Footage aired then from the women's segment from last week. I don't know that I would have followed up with that announcement with that. But Cole hyped the six-woman gauntlet match to determine the number one contender to the Raw Women's Championship for later in the show. I don't know that they ever told us it was going to be the main event. And I do wonder if it's because they kind of were self-aware in that, like, boy, if we say that, we're probably going to lose some people. Let's kind of let this play out. And I'm happy they did. I mean, hopefully people actually stuck around and watched this because I thought it was pretty well done. But backstage, you had Kurt Angle spinning the hopper. That was kind of his role of the evening, was to spin it. And then the women would come in and grab his ball. I mean, reach for balls inside the hopper to determine their place in the gauntlet. Bayley drew her number and nodded. She was kind of smiling. And it's like, usually, as usual with these things, unless it's a heel who's outright grumbling about his position, you can really not read much into this, because she ended up being the first person in. So I don't know why she'd be... I mean, it's Bayley. They can say she wanted to be. I don't know if they'll even bother to cover it, but it always seems odd when you find out. Like, somebody who was happy ended up with a really crappy number. But I guess eternally optimistic Bayley can say that she wants to prove herself. It was then time for the Miz TV segment. They had Big Baller t-shirts set up on the Miz TV in-ring set for the Ball family. That's their brand. And Miz said that he and Maryse had never been happier. He went for a kiss. She turned her head away. And then he said that his guest was the only celebrity who had been talked about as much as him over the last year. Talked about how he called his own shot to win the IC champion, and the guest willed his goal into existence at the NBA draft on Thursday, and he introduced LaVar Ball and his son LaMelo Ball. And I'm not a big NBA guy, but I think Cole helped by saying that LaMelo had scored 92 points in a high school game. So I think it's basically, there may be a daughter or two, I don't know, but I know there's multiple sons, I think three of them. And the one was just drafted number two by the Lakers. And the story goes that, well, I don't think you could avoid this because I'm not an NBA fan and I've even heard about this guy. But the father, LaVar, all over the place, talking. And they brought it up at one point, I think Miz did, about how he claimed he could beat Michael Jordan in a game of one-on-one and all this different stuff about himself. And then saying, like, his son wasn't even going to work out for other teams, only the Lakers, because that's where he was going to be drafted. And it turns out he was drafted by the Lakers. And after seeing this segment, all I can say is, good luck to the Lakers with this mess. They did introduce Lonzo. And again, he was drafted number two overall by the Lakers just this past Thursday. And it was actually his first appearance, I guess, as a member of the Lakers in Staples Center, which is their home court. Miz tried to push a Miz and Big Baller partnership. And LeVar cut him off and said that Miz was a little too low for everybody. And Miz asked how many championships they won, and LeVar said he'd won three. One of his sons said two. They didn't go to the high schooler, so I don't know, has he not won championships? I don't know. But LeVar ended up saying that there's only two dudes better than me, and I'm both of them. And then he told LaMelo to handle his lightweight. And then Miz mocked LeVar and started to remove his gear, like his shirt and things like that, ready for a fight. Well, LeVar removed his T-shirt. And then Dean Ambrose came out. And it seemed like things were kind of falling apart. Ambrose came out wearing a Big Baller shirt, and Ambrose said they wanted someone to represent the Big Baller brand heading into Great Balls of Fire. And he said it has been said that ain't nobody got bigger balls than Dean Ambrose. Plus, I like free T-shirts, he said, so to explain why he was aligned with them. And but then Ambrose's music played, and that kind of ended the segment. And Cole just... I think it was Cole who just kind of said, well, that was something, and then went into hyping another six-man tag that was going to be coming up after the break. I did have a reader ask me on Twitter, and I don't know if there's anything to this, but he thought there may have been something, a remark said that they wouldn't want on air. Let's put it this way. It's something that apparently only Vince McMahon is allowed to say on Raw, and it was shocking enough when he said it. But he didn't really get any heat over it, at any rate. But I didn't catch that. And I did ask, I checked with Brian Fritz. I knew he was watching because he's a Lakers fan and obviously watched WWE Raw. He didn't hear it either. So if anybody out there did, you'll know what I'm talking about. Let me know. But and the only reason I ask is just because the segment felt like it ended so abruptly. I mean, maybe it was scripted this way and it was just kind of an awkward ending to it. But it did feel like, I wrote that in my live review, that it felt like they pulled the plug on the segment. And I was wondering if it was because LeVar was kind of going all over the place. He just seemed like he was kind of starting to go into business for himself. This was a hot mess. Yes, you knew it was going to be. I mean, you might hope, like, all right, they're going to do a good job of laying this out. The family's going to play along, and they can get a little moment out of this. But it just seemed like it was the train wreck you feared it would be. At the same time, you know, they're going to get that ESPN love, I assume, for this. Doesn't make it any more entertaining to watch in some ways. Now, if you like a good train wreck, and I had people telling me today on Twitter that they thought this was a great thing. WWE getting the family in there. It's just it's current and all of that. So, I mean, I'm not an NBA guy, but I know I've heard my buddy Fritz from BetweenTheRopes.com talk about it, again, with him being a Laker fan, and just talk about this family. I'm aware of it, which says something, and with the NBA draft just taking place this past Thursday, it seems like a get for them. It also kind of seems like it may have been a point where some fans could have given up on the show. I don't know. It wasn't there were enough good things that aired before it, even though this was deflating. I don't know how many people they would have lost at this point. I'm not sure. Second match of the night was The Miz, Curtis Axel, and Bo Dallas defeating Dean Ambrose, Heath Slater, and Rhino in 12:20. Maurice was with The Miz for this. It was a distraction. The referee distracted when Axel from the ring apron punched Rhino, and then Bo Dallas rolled him up. So it's Miz. It's the Miztourage is what they're calling it. Is what they're calling Axel and Dallas. And so you kind of had to figure they were going to go over in their first match. But crowd not all that into this. It was pretty quiet there. It's going to take some time. I mean, I was hoping they'd kind of get creative when they gave Miz this entourage. Maybe some of it is just, I mean, do Axel and Bo Dallas really seem like anyone's entourage? They just seem like the guys who are going to be hanger-ons, and they just, you know, they don't look the part, I guess, is some of it, in my mind anyway. I think Bo Dallas has improved. I think he's come a long way from the Justin Bieber-like character that he was playing in NXT. Now, I liked that character and felt there was more they could do with it, but as far as, I shouldn't even say that character. It was what occurred after it with the campaign sign and all of that. He's changed his look. He's more aggressive in the ring, that sort of a thing. I was wondering if they were going to put him with his brother, but no, I mean, these guys are just... in this role, and it almost feels like they're, at first I was like, well, cool, let's see what they do, and I'm still keeping an open mind to it, but I can't say that I saw chemistry there, and I think that's kind of the tough part. They don't look the part. There's no real chemistry here, but we'll give it some time. But yeah, it maybe Slater actually would have been better off with Miz and these guys when he when Miz threw out that that invite for Heath Slater to join him. But yeah, man, the momentum from that the first half hour or so of the show felt like it was gone at this point following the Miz TV segment and then this six-man tag. So not a great night for the Miz and Ambrose as far as heating up their program. But you had the Balls, you had the Miztourage, so it really wasn't completely about what they were doing either. We got a shot of Paul Heyman pacing backstage as he awaited Brock Lesnar. And then we had Michael Cole set up a video package that recapped Big Cass turning on Enzo Amore. And they did get a good shot, I didn't even catch this last week, of Enzo. There was one tear that streamed down his cheek as Big Cass was cutting a promo on him. So that was a nice touch. And then we got a shot of Enzo walking backstage, and he received a very favorable reaction from the live crowd. They were excited to see him, and Cole said that he would appear after the break, and he did. He made his entrance and did his part of the usual Enzo and Big Cass entrance shtick, and the fans were with him. I was kind of wondering. I mean, Enzo's pretty popular. He's a good talker. He's fun. So I thought the fans would be with him, but you just never quite know. You know, are they going to side with the guy they think is going to win this feud? No, it wasn't like that. And Enzo, long story short on this, because this was a longer segment, you had Enzo call out Big Cass and basically tell him, yeah, a lot of what you said last week really hurt, but a lot of it was right. I do have a big mouth and all this, but we're brothers. I want to stay together as a team. We still have, we need to win the WWE Tag Team Championship. Cass ultimately said he felt bad for what he did, and he said he'd never been so ashamed in his life. And he did say, yeah, that Enzo's loud, annoying, and constantly runs his mouth, but that's him, and he accepts him for who he is. They are brothers. And he apologized in front of the world to his brother Enzo, and said he's sorry for everything he's done, and he was so basically, you know, asked him to accept his apology. Now the fans were aware of what was going on because they chanted no, but they ended up leaving the ring together. Looked like hey, they're one big happy family again. And then they got to the top of the entrance, and they raised arms, and wouldn't you know it, it was Paul Orndorff turning on Hulk Hogan, the big clothesline as they're standing there raising arms together. The segment was well done. I mean, yeah, you could kind of see where it was going. It was a little predictable in terms of what Cass was going to do, but so be it. There was part of me wondering, like, are they going to stretch this out for a week, have them team together, and then pull the rug out by having, you know, Cass beat the hell out of him again? But no, they took care of it here. But I thought Enzo was really good. I mean, we know he's a good talker, and I thought he, you know, showed some range here. You know, you kind of get like hyper Enzo going into promo mode and doing shtick, where this kind of required him to show a little bit of emotion and tone it down a little bit and come off like a guy who was trying to speak from his heart. And I thought he did that really well, and I thought Cass was good in response. And so, good segment. I'm still, you know, very very much looking forward to seeing what they can do with Cass as the heel now. And also, you know, I'm not as optimistic about it, but I want to see what they do with Enzo. I mean, he is a very good talker. I think, you know, most people would tell you he's pretty limited in the ring. But let's see what he can do. What does his career become coming out of this? I think we're all kind of focused on Big Cass, but obviously there's another guy there who's a pretty good talker. So let's see where Enzo ends up following this Big Cass turn. Then coming out of a commercial break, we ended up, oh, and by the way, I did like this. They showed a graphic for Seth Rollins appearing after the break, and the broadcast team completely laid out by that point to kind of let the segment speak for itself. And then coming out of that break, we saw some clips of, not even clips, but just like shots of Sasha Banks at the BET Awards, and they said she was nominated for a Kids' Choice Award. Believe it or not, it was not for the most miscast babyface. I was surprised by that. I don't even know what the award was. Anyway, broadcast team talked about Well, they kind of they were talking when Big Cass just showed up and confronted Corey Graves. And Cass said Kurt Angle told him he couldn't lay a finger on Graves. He questioned what he did, what he had on Angle, and assumed it must be good. And then he told Graves to stay out of his business and walked away. And Graves quickly tried to turn the focus back to the show. So I guess the Kurt Angle thing is still in play. This was the only real acknowledgement of it on the show that I recall. So yeah, I mean they're still making it seem like Graves at least has something, or that they just acknowledge that storyline's existence, even though Kurt Angle just kind of seems like business as usual. Let me spin the hopper, reach on in and grab the balls, girls. Or that was kind of his role in the show. It wasn't like he's no longer obsessed with his phone or anything like that. So I don't know if they just backed off and they don't know where this is going, or if this is a very slow developing thing. Maybe they want to create a little distance between that and the Enzo and Cass thing, which I think they should have done from the start, because it was confusing. It was like, are these connected? What? It was not in a good way. It was just like awkward. I wasn't sure if with having Graves and Angle involved in both, like, is this all together? Maybe we'll find out it still is somehow. I don't know. But the third match was Seth Rollins beating Curt Hawkins in 3 minutes. They gave Hawkins a little pre-match mic work before Seth Rollins. Well, Hawkins ended up getting out to a quick start, but then it was all Seth Rollins, and he won with I think the still unnamed move that he does now, where he pulls the opponent in and hits him with a high knee to the head. As Will Pruitt pointed out, it's he was at the show tonight, and he made it seem like it's the Rainmaker that ends with a knee instead of a clothesline. I think that's a pretty accurate assessment. Then we ended up with Bray Wyatt appearing on the big screen and saying that Rollins thinks his soul is cleansed because mankind has forgiven him for his transgressions. He said Rollins carries around a corporate flag and tells fans to be like no one, yet he blindly leads the ignorant to a place from which there is no return. And he said he would save Rollins. And he told Rollins to be careful of what he wishes for, because he's inside his mind and he's everywhere. And he said July 9th will be the day of Seth's reclamation. And he told him to give in to his true self or he will burn. Now, if you recall, I really liked last week's segment with these two, with Wyatt kind of feeding off the things that Rollins had said that night. This was kind of a recap almost, with Wyatt still kind of almost not completely repeating himself, but playing on some of the themes that came up last week. It was okay. Last week was much better. I would, it's like I want to believe, like, all right, there's something on July 9th, which I assume is the pay-per-view day, and there's a threat here, and Rollins, maybe he is gonna kind of show us the we're gonna see that heelish Seth Rollins, and Wyatt is right in predicting this, or there's gonna be consequences, and but there's just not, I mean, I guess seeing is believing. That's kind of the thing that we've learned with Bray Wyatt. He talks a lot, makes a lot of threats. They don't really lead to much in most cases. Backstage, you had Mickie James and Dana Brooke open their gauntlet match numbers, and then Paul Heyman was shown standing by a bus that was parked backstage. An SUV pulled in, and Heyman was smiling because, yes, indeed, Brock Lesnar emerged from the SUV, and they went to a break. An ad for Wednesday's NXT television show hyped Asuka against Nikki Cross in a last woman standing match for the NXT Women's Championship. Of course, you can join Zach Zimmerman for live coverage of that show at ProWrestling.net as NXT airs at 7 Central, 8 Eastern Time. Then at the top of the third hour, you had Kurt Angle shaking his balls for Sasha. All right, that sounds horrible. All right, Sasha reached in and grabbed her ball for the gauntlet match. That's it. And she liked what she grabbed, or she liked the number she got, because she smiled. And she had good reason to, as we'll talk about. Then Paul Heyman was in the ring, and when he was introduced by JoJo, he cut a promo saying that he doesn't fight anyone, but if he did, he would do the same cheap shot type of move that Joe did, because if he were to fight someone backstage, because he knows that everyone would then pull you apart quickly. And he said that's what Joe did, not once but twice, when he brawled with Lesnar 2 weeks ago. And he said it's now is the time for Joe to start to fear Lesnar. And he said he hopes that fans have enjoyed the anticipation, but now is when the bathroom break is over. Time to hit record. It's the moment that everyone will be talking about tomorrow, he said. And he introduced Brock Lesnar and said he was calling out Joe for a fight. Well, Brock comes out onto the stage, and the crowd did give him a big babyface reaction. And that's when Joe showed up and hit Brock from behind. and then applied the coquina clutch, or at least was trying to. And Brock turned red, eventually spun his way out of it, and pushed Joe into the video wall, not once but twice. And then Joe threw knees at Lesnar and ended up applying the hold while three referees came out and were barking at them. I guess you have to make it look like the referees are trying to get some control. But the Revival and Carl Anderson then came out and pulled Joe off and to the back while the fans were chanting "Let them fight." And Lesnar sold this the hold by staying on the ground for a little bit there and then getting back to one knee, still looking really weary as they went to a break. And this was well done. I thought this was a strong segment, just trying to obviously emphasize that Brock's in trouble. If Joe can catch him in that coquina clutch finisher, that yeah, it's Joe's good. That move is the hold is devastating enough that it could even take down Brock Lesnar. So they're doing a good job with this. I'm looking forward to the match quite a bit. Side note, nice that Revival and Carl Anderson were willing to put aside their pre-show differences. They actually worked a match for the main event. I won't give you the spoiler for the 12 of you who watch main event and don't want the show to be spoiled. But yeah, the Revival faced Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson on main event. And I've asked a couple of people, or I actually got a couple of reports, and I asked Will like who the baby faces were and who were the heels. And I've heard two different things, so I may even watch main event for once. All right, let's not be ridiculous. There's enough wrestling on this weekend with New Japan and Impact Wrestling, so no main event for me. Coming out of the commercial break, you had the broadcast team recapping that segment, and they were good here. Cole said that Lesnar was obviously having trouble breathing while he was in the hold. Graves said that Lesnar looked glassy in the eyes, and that could be what happens at Great Balls of Fire. And Booker said he hadn't seen fear like that in Lesnar's eyes in a long time. And I got to mention, nobody turns red quite like Brock Lesnar. I mean, you see it when he gets in the ring and his matches start. I mean, the guy turns like pinkish red. And so when Joe applied the hold, Brock's head looked like it was about to pop. It looked really good. I forgot to mention that part of it. And just a really good segment again, and with the broadcast team doing their part coming out of the commercial break to put it over. In the fourth match, it was Neville defeating Lince Dorado in a non-title match in 3 minutes. Akira Tozawa, he's not just seated in the crowd now. Sure, he could just come down and watch the show from ringside, like we see wrestlers do all the time, but no, he has a VIP section. It's not to be confused with the VIP section that that Tyler Breeze was using in NXT and on the main roster briefly. It was this was a cheap version of that. There just was like a rope, a velvet rope, and it was set up by the Titus brand. Oh wait, it's no longer the Titus brand. Michael Cole informed us it's Titus Worldwide. You know, because that's been the problem with Titus O'Neil. It's, if we just called it something other than the Titus brand, people are going to love this. It's now Titus Worldwide. Boats and hoes, baby. Boats and hoes. After the match, you had, it was just a Neville win, by the way, with the Rings of Saturn in 3 minutes. And then afterward, Tozawa entered the ring and it looked like he and Neville were about to go at it. When out came old Don King, Titus O'Neil, with a mic in hand, asking why they would fight for free when he just finalized a match between them for Great Balls of Fire. I still don't get this. I think Titus screams undercard. And, it's like, you put him in the main feud on 205 Live in the cruiserweight division, whatever you want to label it. I don't think it helps these guys in any way. I think there were people out there looking forward to Tozawa and Neville, and not that they're not going to look forward to their match, but I just don't see who they think this really appeals to. Who's sitting around going, "Oh man, I care so much more about Neville and Tozawa because of Titus's involvement." I haven't really been into anything they've done with this whole Titus brand and now Titus Worldwide bit. And now that they're moving it over to the cruiserweight side of things, I couldn't care less. Backstage, Emma grabbed one of Kurt Angle's two balls. Right, the ones that were in the hopper, you sick Jesus. She got her number. And then coming out of a commercial break, you had Charlie Caruso ask Paul Heyman for his reaction to what happened. And he said it proved everything he said about why the Samoans disliked Samoa Joe. He said they're a proud people, trained from birth to take a fight to your face, even the women. And he said that Joe had to sneak up on Lesnar and apply it from behind. And he conceded that, yeah, Joe applied the coquina clutch on Lesnar. then there will be a new Universal Champion. And he loves this because he's a promoter, he said. Heyman said that Lesnar's back is up against the wall, and he said it will be a down-and-dirty fight, but Lesnar will eventually take Joe to Suplex City, and he said Joe's going to wake up in the trainer's room and say, "Dear God, is that what it's like to fight the Beast? Goodness gracious, great balls of fire." God bless Paul Heyman. He found a way to work in this awful pay-per-view title name and actually make it sound cool. Just in this one moment, I thought it was very clever the way he did that. I thought this was a good promo. I didn't even catch it all. He was just he was in Heyman mode. He was spitting out all sorts of words, and it was hard to keep up with them when you're transcribing it. But I thought it was really, really strong promo from Paul Heyman. And then we went to Alexa Bliss approaching Nia Jax backstage. And she asked Nia what number she drew. And Jax replied, "Wouldn't you like to know?" And Bliss said, "You know, we're more alike than you think." She said people have made assumptions about her because of how she looks. And she said no one expected her to make it in WWE. And her own mother laughed at her when she told her that she was signed. She said they are both judged by the way they look, and it's not right. And Bliss said whether Jax goes out first or last or in the middle, she wanted her to know that there's not a single woman who could drag her down. And she said, "I know you don't need it, but good luck." And Jack said, "You're right, she doesn't need it." And we'll see Bliss and the title at the Great Balls of Fire event. And Cole said the gauntlet match was up next. Now tell me at that point you weren't going, "Oh, so they're foreshadowing a Nia Jax win." Because I was. I'm like, I'm not even going to write this because people watching the show, I don't want to ruin it for them. You know, it's just like they're guilty of this. I'm like, oh, I'll save it for afterward and complain about it then. Well, I was wrong. So it was a nice tease. Now, the other thing they could be doing here is just kind of softening things between Bliss and Jax. Maybe they're not ready to go to that after all. The crowd didn't really respond to it, I think, the way they had hoped they would. You know, when they teased that match, I remember talking about it, they got a good reaction when they would have those two in the ring and kind of have little moments between them. And then when they had that brief match on Raw, the crowd just kind of sat there. It was kind of a weird moment. So I don't know if WWE's, like, pulling back creatively on this, and like, Bliss is kind of, she didn't even come off all that, because usually you kind of get, yeah, I'm dating myself, the whole Eddie Haskell bit from her. She can't help but kind of smile when the other person's not looking and show you that, you know, she's playing that person. We didn't really see that here, and so it's like, is she kind of, is Jax going to come out of what happened to her in the main event, and maybe be a little more aligned with Alexa than we would have assumed, or is this just, no, it's Alexa playing mind games, and them doing some mind games of their own by teasing you with, hey, yeah, we're over foreshadowing again, except, hey, wait, we're not. But we got another teaser, speaking of teasers, for John Cena's return on July 4th. Fifth match of the night, it was a gauntlet to become the number one contender for the Raw Women's Championship. As we talked about, Sasha Banks won it. 28-25 is the length of the match. Nia went bell to bell. The first two entrants were Bayley and Nia, and Bayley put up a fight, but she was eliminated in 3:35. Mickey James was out next. They cut to a break after her entrance, and she got in some offense, but Jax pinned her at the 10-minute mark. Dana Brooke was the third entrant. They didn't keep her in there for long. She was eliminated at 11 minutes in with a leg drop. Emma was fourth, and Jax put her away with a Samoan drop in 12:20, so she wasn't out there for long either. And then the final entrant was Sasha. So Jax, the out is that, hey, she'd already wrestled for, you know, 12 minutes and nearly 13 by the time Sasha got to the ring with her entrance, if you want to be technical about it. And she went through four other women before Sasha even had to walk to the ring. So that's why Nia was protected very well here, and it was still competitive. You know, Jax was still performing some big power moves on Sasha. Crowd was into Sasha by the end of this, certainly. I mean, they were into it when she came out, but I think, like, the momentum grew as the match went on, and people were excited when she ended up getting the win. She performed well late in the match. Yeah, Jax power up Sasha for a Samoan drop, but Sasha caught her in a modified bank statement, and then Jax dropped to her knees, and Sasha held a hold, and Jax ended up tapping out to give Sasha the win. So Jax put up a fight before tapping out, and yeah, I mean, normally you wouldn't think you'd see the monster, you know, someone they're trying to get over is the monster of a division tapping out, but in this case, case again. You know, she fought four other women before this, and so there's plenty of protection built in for Nia Jax losing this match, and I'm sure they'll be bringing that all up next week, whether it's the broadcast team talking about it, or Bliss, or Nia herself, or maybe all of the above. We'll be hearing about that. But then afterward, you had Kurt Angle's music played. He came out and raised the hand of Sasha. Then Alexa came out wearing the Raw Women's Championship, and Cole was hyping Bliss against Banks as being official for Great Balls of Fire. Bliss got in the ring and held up the title belt. Sasha ended up dropkicking her, and then Bliss went to ringside. Sasha held up the championship, and eventually Bliss got it back, and Sasha was jawing at Bliss, who was on the floor as they wrapped up the show. So yeah, they you know, I don't know that you're going to get this match being featured as prominently next week, but it was kind of a pleasant surprise. Again, one that had I known going into the show, I'd have been like, ooh, you know, the Raw, you can do this with the SmackDown women. They've been pretty consistent with their push. Money in the Bank finish aside, I still think it's all part of it, and we'll see tomorrow night as far as how well this second version of the Money in the Bank match gets over and all of that. But I think they just are more consistent with the push of their women. The women on the Raw side have felt cold. Even Alexa, you know, who had that clunker of a This Is Your Life segment. They've just been kind of throwing them all out there together and haven't been doing a really good job with this. And so I would have been like, they're too cold to put in that main event slot. Well, hey, I would have been wrong, because clearly they put them there, and the crowd was receptive to it by the end. And so I enjoyed this, and I think it was a good spotlight match for the upcoming Sasha and Bliss match at the pay-per-view. Curious to see what that means as far as SummerSlam is concerned. All right, I mean, is it as simple as, well, you don't get your decisive winner here, you got to go back at SummerSlam to see that, or if they're going to have the Raw women doing something else? I'm not quite sure, but a good show overall. Again, yeah, the ball segment, weird. They got their ESPN moment out of it, so they'll be happy with that attention. But when they really kind of focused in on certain things for the Great Balls of Fire show, the women, Lesnar, Joe, and then certainly Roman and Strowman, and I'm probably forgetting one other segment that I felt like they did a really nice job of setting up things for the pay-per-view. But those three for sure. What else am I forgetting about that? I can't remember right now. I can't find it right now as I kind of skimmed through. But those were the ones that really jumped out, at least are jumping out at me now. So I thought this was a good show. And it did increase my level of enthusiasm heading into the Great Balls of Fire show coming up, not this Sunday, but a week from Sunday will be that pay-per-view. Don't forget, you can join us for live coverage of the New Japan Pro Wrestling in California show on Friday night. I will have it. Will Pruitt will be giving you guys live updates from the building on Saturday. He's going to both shows, but he's going to be giving you guys live updates on Sunday, because I will be covering the Impact Wrestling Slammiversary show. So you're going to have lots of live coverage on the site this week. We would love it if you joined us. We would also love it if you sampled .NET membership, the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. If you enjoyed this full-length audio review of WWE Raw, know that members hear it on a weekly basis, coming out of the Raw show, also coming out of SmackDown. They hear Zach Zimmerman's audio reviews of the NXT shows on a weekly basis. They hear my reviews of Impact Wrestling, John Moore's Lucha Underground reviews. The list goes on. We cover all the major television shows and pay-per-view events in audio form for the members. Sometimes you guys hear them on the All Access side, but they are there every week for the .NET members. And again, it's the ad-free version of the site. If you are interested, visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Click into the sign-up area. Find three different pricing options. $7.50 gets you in the door for 1 month. We also have options where you can save some money. If you commit a little bit to either 6 month or annual, that annual membership brings the price down an average of $2 per month, dropping it to $5.50 per month on average. And don't forget, one final plug. You can also find yourself a hell of a deal just by listening to the Ross Report podcast that I was on. Jim Cornette will be next in line on the Ross Report podcast, but I was last week's guest. You can still find that at podcast1.com. And in the process, you're going to find yourself a great deal. You'll find out why Great Balls is such a meaningful thing. Even before Raw tonight, Great Balls was a big deal on the Raw show. Let's just say you're going to find yourself a deal that you're going to be happy with if you're interested in .NET membership, but check that out at podcastone.com. But that'll do it for now, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back on Tuesday night with my WWE SmackDown review exclusively for the .NET members. So until then, thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.